Hello and welcome to Adventures in Venueland, an EVMC podcast. Join us for this all-access pass backstage and behind the scenes with some of the brightest minds that cross the scope of the live event industry. I'm Dave Rettelberger.
And I'm Paul Hooper. We'll introduce you to incredible guests who journey with us as we dive deep into the world of venues, tours, festivals, and everything in between. Grab your laminate and meet us in Venueland.
Have you ever thought you've been doing your job long enough that you could be teaching it? Well, that's kind of what we're talking about today in a different kind of a adventure in Venueland, where we're talking with a woman whose teaching career draws on an extensive media career. It's included everything from on-air positions in marketing management, sales management, general management, ownership, TV and radio, online experience, all happening in Pittsburgh, where we're going to check in with Paige Beal. She's an associate professor at Point Park University in the Rowland School of Business, teaching in the sports, arts, entertainment, and music business. And I know that we all still have a lot to learn, so look forward to a lesson today. Paige, thanks for making the time for us today.
It's a pleasure. I'm really honored to be a part of your podcast. And believe me, every day I'm learning. Nothing changes. The more time we're in here, it is not like anything stays still.
It's true.
Pittsburgh is a neat city, and you've kind of got a multiple venue playground right around you, right?
It's amazing. Yeah, we're very, very fortunate to be in the middle of both a strong cultural community as well as a community that boasts, you know, an arena with PPG Arena, and along with the Acrisure Stadium and then PNC Park, and, you know, multiple like mid, I guess, capacity venues like Stage AE and, you know, more to come, another like two or three on the horizon with about 1,000 to 1,500 capacity venues that are yet to be built. So, yeah, very vibrant. It's a great place to have a program like we have.
I was going to say, that's a great way where when you're teaching it, you can make those local references and people have that point. You know, if you're talking about working at a theater or working at an arena, you can bring people to one of those, or you can, you know, connect them with an internship locally, which, you know, not every market has. So I think that's a huge benefit.
Absolutely.
You really preach a lot about the importance of shadowing and those kind of things, right?
Yeah, we do. You know, literally all of those things that I just mentioned are steps from our campus because it's an urban campus. And so we think it's really important that even as a student comes in as a first year student, that they start flipping the switch, you know, on their own thought processes about them not being a student, but being a young profession. And in doing that, like they take an initial course, you know, the introductory course, and it's involved in doing some shadowing. Now, we're real fortunate because we've been around now for, I think it's about 15 or more years. And so we have alumni that are working in all of these different places.
Sure.
So it is extremely common for them not only to serve as shadowing partners, and we run, oh, I would say 60, 90 shadowing, you know, entities in any given year, which means that somebody is volunteering to spend time with these first year students and, you know, make sure that they understand that this is a profession. And again, that the fandom kind of comes secondary. And are you sure you know what you're going to sign up for? Because that means many times your weekends are gone or
right,
whatever it might be. So it gives them an immediate and very personal look at a potential career. And if they like it, great. If they don't like it, you know, that's great too, because part of them trying to figure out what they're going to do is what they don't want to do.
Right. That's so important also. Yes.
So important. Yeah.
So true. Yeah. So that's the first step. But then, you know, we're big on internships. You know, many of our students do three or more. You know, it's a big part of our program.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, Point Park University, because for those of people who are not maybe familiar with it, just kind of what it is and your role there.
Great. Yeah, we have, about 4,000 students enrolled here. We have all the various schools that you would have in any given university. We are right down in the middle of Pittsburgh itself, which if you haven't been there, it's a very concise city. So that makes it very helpful. When I say steps from the campus, I mean steps from the campus. It's not like a broad area that they have to cover. We have been here in the, let me see, the Roland School of Business for, you know, the time of our degree ever having been present, but we work across a variety of different programs. We have the Conservatory for Performing Arts, which is renowned for, I believe it boasts having more dancers on Broadway than any other school in the U.S.
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah, so we have venue baked into our blood with some spring-loaded floors to help them make it through their 4 years. But, you know, we have the Pittsburgh Playhouse, which is a really well-known venue here, one of the newer venues having been built in Pittsburgh with three different, let me see, you have the PNC, which is like a 550, then Black Box, 200 capacity with Highmark, and then the Rao Theater, which is 100 Black Box, plus a number of other entities on campus that serve a variety of purposes. We've got a strong cinema program, so you have a cinema facility. We've got a really good School of Comm with all the trappings that you would imagine would be around that. So all of this kind of sounds like in a similar type of entertainment business, and that's the intention. We do have people who come here for a major, let's say, in accounting or in a major in, you know, some of the sciences. But really what we're known for is in this entertainment thing.
That's so interesting. I mean, I think you typically see that at, I would say, larger universities. So I love that it's really leaning into fitting that niche role. You know, like we are sort of this hub, whether you're performing on stage, whether you're learning about running a stage, you know, it's like, here's a great point to kind of pull people to. Is that something that kind of drew you to your current role? Like, I mean, Dave, you know, we'll go through kind of more of the details of your past, but, you know, is that something that sort of pulled you to your involvement with it?
To a certain extent, I came in right before they actually started this program. So that came from kind of one of those serendipitous, I've been in the media business for a number of years and knew one of the gentlemen in the School of Comm, and they were hiring for someone to teach an advertising course. And so just so happened, they need this grad advertising course covered. So I covered it. And then all of a sudden, within a year, I discovered this particular program. And then we got together. When I say we, there's a number of folks that I work with. They're all professionals. We all are tending to be more professional turned academician than sure. the opposite, you know? So,
yeah.
And that's one of the pluses is because we got strong networks of people that we can tap into for the students. So that, yeah, it was kind of serendipitous that this happened at the same time. And I said, oh, guess what? You're a pretty good match for this program. Would you like to teach in this program? And then eventually I migrated totally into it. Yeah.
I love that.
It's got to be, I was talking with a teacher just yesterday about how it's an interesting time to be a teacher. And we're kind of dealing with some different mindsets post-pandemic with students. And I wonder if that's something you've encountered.
I have. I think it was a very, very difficult time for young people, just not having that kind of social experience in their schools prior to coming here, and then coming here, coming off of not having that social experience. And a big part of what we teach are the soft skills, you know, that they refer to, because you're all in the
yes.
business, you understand what I'm saying. Like, it's really more important to get somebody who's got, you know, the ability to work in the team, who has good communication skills, who will show up on time.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah. Just the title, right?
Yeah, all yeah. those things.
It's important, though. It's so important. Right.
You can teach a lot of other stuff, but you need kind of the basic structure, the bones of it. Yeah.
Well, and universities aren't set up to teach soft skills. So so the thing is, we do. We teach a lot of that along with everything else that we do. So we, in that one shadowing program that I was telling you about, about a third of that year is spent trying to teach all these kind of soft things. Like, you may not think about this as being a thing, but it's really hard for them to transition from, you know, messaging into an email format. That is not something that comes naturally. That's something that we have to spend time explaining. Okay, this is a lot different, you know, and you have to capitalize things. You have to create a signature. You have to respond to people in a timely fashion. And what is
a
timely fashion?
Good luck getting them to pick up a phone.
Yeah, right? not happening. But there's a lot around that would happen anyways. But because of the pandemic, it was really tough for them to think, understand, like, the visual body language of connecting to people and, you know, looking people in the eye you know, just not used to that. And it was shocking to me the difference, you know, pre and post pandemic. We're beginning to see, you know, them come in with a little bit more pre-pandemic perspective, which is sure. really great, but it definitely had a, it was a tough time for them. Yeah.
Did you see, as far as just a general enthusiasm around the industry, did you see any apprehension to that with the pandemic? Because obviously we all know the live events industry got eviscerated pretty badly. But then also it's rebounded extremely fast, especially particularly in the last like year and a half or so. So I feel like as much as it dipped really low, it's also boomed up really high. And has that similar trends happened with people entering the program of, well, I don't know if I want to go into this because what is this industry? You know, how volatile is it? But also, I could see people being, now they're going to more events than ever, and maybe they're as excited or more than they've ever been.
Yeah, I think we had a turning point last year with Taylor Swift and two performances and
right.
$46 million in Pittsburgh.
You guys handing out flyers in the parking lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that really, honestly, if you're looking at a particular time where it seemed like it turned, and yes, people were concerned, during the pandemic and wondering when that is going to change. It changed so quickly. Honestly, it just seemed like it flew by me, but all of a sudden we were having event after an event again. We were all into, you know, touchless, you know, entry, and, you know, everything seemed to adjust so quickly coming out of it. So yes, it's a concern. But the other thing that we try to talk about is, you know, we have a strong influence in live event, you know, and in venue. But as we all know, from a marketing perspective, the mediated part of it, you know, go hand in hand with the live venue thing. So we've been, we're looking at both parts of that as we went through the pandemic and coming out of it.
Help us from, you know, an employer standpoint, right? So a lot of us are in venues or, you know, in our jobs, and we are looking to hire new people. And what do you know about relating or getting the best out of young folks that would help us, you know, kind of connect with them in a better way, so we're not as easily frustrated?
Okay. So the first thing I'd
Sold
say
it
is
for us,
participate.
Paige.
Yeah.
Sure, it's easy.
Question, sorry.
Yeah.
No solutions, but some really strong thoughts. And that is to create an internship program, a robust internship program within your facilities. Because if you don't bring them in, if you don't give them an opportunity to actually, you know, step into your facility and understand what they're going to be doing day to day, then they have no place to actually, you know, file this under the career path that they think they're going to be going into. And that's why we're so strong on shadowing and internships, because you don't know until you do it. And so, like in the past, I would say, pre-pandemic too, not like we have, like I said, a very robust shadowing and internship program, but coming out of the pandemic with the unemployment rate as low as it is, we have a really robust shadowing and internship, because people are beginning to understand that's the funnel, that's the recruitment funnel. Like, why hire people out of a paper resume when you can have them come in and actively participate, and they can figure out if they like you, you can figure out if you like them, and you can move forward. And then you know that you have somebody who's already been a part of the culture. They've been exposed to the culture, and they can be somebody that you can depend on, and they can depend on you. So that I think is the critical part of, you know, making sure that you hire well. And by doing so, I also want to say that I think they should be paid. You know, we have a lot of students, they are by far now doing more paid internships than not. And it's not like anybody's, you know, getting over on the whole thing. They are working, you know, and we are a school that has a very high first generation percentage of students that are coming out. You know, this is the first generation in their family that they are going to school. And many, I'd say about 60% of the kids in my classes report having a part-time or a full-time job while they're going to school. So they're working people. So put them to work, you know.
Yeah.
I guess that would be my overall, not 100% solution, but it certainly has been working for us here.
It makes sense. I mean, you can not only see it as a way to develop the students and give them a great opportunity by introducing them to the industry, but you're also kind of vetting them. You know, sometimes you don't ever know when you're doing interviews or looking through a resume on, wow, this is maybe the perfect resume. And then you bring them in and they're a nightmare to work with. And other times it's the opposite. Sometimes people get so nervous during interviews, or they're maybe their resume skills are not great and they are the dream employee that you would maybe skip otherwise. So having different opportunities to bring in people through the shadowing, it kind of lets you test drive the car a little bit. You know, you're kind of
That's
like
right.
seeing
Yeah.
who gels within the department too. I mean, there's so much of that too that sometimes it comes down to fit, you know, as much as it does skill set. And I think that's a great opportunity to really you know, find the great talent that's going to stick around.
Absolutely. And I think like we really doubled down on it. We actually have an event management class. It has an event management two, and that event management two is a program that is where we actually put students into working events as part of the class. And so we have relationships with all those venues that we talked about at the very beginning of the podcast. And, you know, those folks often need runners. And when people come into town, they don't have, as you know, much of our business is on contract. And that's a great way to, you know, have someone come in and work one particular show or series of shows. And then again, you get the same type of exposure, but, you know, we make sure that they're out there and in the venues. So it's very rare that someone goes through one of our goes through our program and doesn't come out with opportunities because they're already in there interacting.
I think that's so important that you get your hands dirty and learn a little bit, like you said, about what you do and what you don't want to do. But let's talk about it from the other side, because a lot of us have been in the business for a while, and at some point, you know, we are not as willing to learn what's new, right? So whether it's the latest on TikTok or, you know, AI or whatever it is, I mean, that's what we do at our EVMC conference, right? Is always cover the new stuff. So there are a lot of people that are there, but I'm wondering what tools you use to speak to the students and to teach so that when you're staying up to date with the latest things and innovations in marketing, especially when it comes to, you know, the live entertainment industry.
Well, you know, AI is a great example. So the tools that I'm using right now are all of the generative AI tools. So whether it be ChatGPT or Bard slash Gemini or whatever ones that are coming out, we try to stay on top of them or we try to bring them into the classroom. So for instance, in my marketing classes, we'll go through exercises where they're working and they always work on real clients. So for instance, we're working right now with the city paper, Pittsburgh City Paper, and we're creating a marketing campaign for them. And, you know, it's real, 100,000 foot type of work because we're making pretend that marketing is linear and we're, working with a client. So the, you know, client is coming in and talking with us and they're usually putting campaigns together around their own generation. So it's a Gen Z focus. But it gives the client like a Gen Z think tank of sorts. So in this case, when we get to the part where we're talking about creating messaging and creating content, I'll work with them on utilizing AI to go in there and actually, you know, get some, use some prompts, some good prompts, hopefully, that will bring them back like X number of posts for X, you know, social that they ask for so that they're actually utilizing it. And, you know, I think we just have to interact with it. We have to stay on top of it. And that's, you all know as marketers, you know, you can't languish on yesteryear for sure. So making sure that they have the tools is in part making sure they're actually putting their hands on the platforms as much as possible. That's to me anyways.
I totally agree. What do you see, you know, for maybe people listening that are those new students, whether they're in a program elsewhere, whether they're in your program, or maybe they're just in the first, you know, year or two of a career and they got a assistant or coordinator role somewhere. Are there any trends or tips or something that are kind of general that you know, are seeing these, you know, kids experience that, you know, you might help guide them, you know, through. I mean, also a very loaded question because I know there's endless challenges that they all experience. But I mean, I think that's something, you know, putting myself back in those shoes, you know, there's a lot of new things that I did not have to kind of deal with, you know, when I was getting an internship back then, and a lot of skill sets that are required now that maybe wouldn't have been back then, not to mention just the way the world works now and how people consume information and consume digital media. And, you know, what kind of tips do you have or general tips? I don't know. I'm spinning my wheels right here, talking at
No,
one another,
I get you. I get you. I think I,
but
yeah, no, first of all, to remain curious
yeah.
and in doing so, like I'm sure you all have your favorite things that you follow to try to keep up with everything that's going on. And that's like that's like a job to begin with. I mean, honestly, I spent a lot of time working while I was teaching up until a couple of years ago. And what I really love about teaching is that it frees up the time to be able to keep up with things. And that's a gift because there's so much to keep up with. Remain curious. And in your particular field, figure out what you want to follow in order to keep up with it. You know, who it is on Instagram, who it is on TikTok, who it is, you know, in any of these entities, you know, and then, you know, follow what they're guiding you toward. And, you know, what I hear most of the time from the other folks that I work with from a marketing perspective is that certifications really talk to them. And, you know, it's not like you can take one certification and then kind of walk away. But if you don't have your hands on a particular platform, get yourself certified, you know, and it seems like those native certifications are the ones that people are feeling. And I'd be interested to hear what you all are thinking about this. But like, you know, get natively certified in one shape or form or another, just so that you have that, you know, in the event of. There's so many times that we all are jack of all trades, right? You know, and so if you have some sort of idea and you have a curious nature and you're willing to take on a platform, you know, and you have the confidence to be like, yeah, I don't know it today, but I can figure it out in a year or sorry, not a year, a week, right. You know. That's the kind of thing that I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You're also a big believer in, you know, and you've been involved with many, like, you know, management or, you know, marketing associations over the years.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And those are great social opportunities to, you know, connect with people that are in like-minded, you know, types of industries and like-minded kind of functions and be able to understand, you know, what's going on in their world. And yeah, that makes that's a huge benefit from a networking perspective. And, you know, you all in your podcast, I hear it all the time. You know, people are saying network, network, network. Yeah. I'm not going to say anything different. You know, it just is so important. And there hasn't been a person I've met in the business that hasn't gotten most, if not all of their jobs because of networking. And it's really tough to get somebody who's just stepping on a career path to understand how important that is. And, you know, that you're not being a pest when you reach out to someone a couple of times, you know, that you really have to put yourself out there. And if it's fake it till you make it, then that's what it is. But, you know, those contacts, those networks are just really what help you along your career.
And you'd be surprised how easy it is sometimes. You know, I think sometimes people get intimidated by it because they're thinking, oh, you know, my network is so small right now. How do I meet this person over here? But, you know, if this podcast is evidence of that, you know, we know a number of guests that we've had on for a while, but there's a lot that we didn't know. And sometimes it's like you or others where I'll discover because I know, you know, some other people on LinkedIn and someone likes a post, and it's great at like feeding you information from people that maybe you've never knew before. And then it's really easy to connect with that person, send them a message. Hey, I saw this cool promotion you did, you know, it was really just a really nice follow-up note. And you'd be surprised how that can lead to a job or it can lead to a mentorship. Or anything like that. And often people are very receptive to kind of making those connections on their own because they realize that this young person reaching out to me, they might be my future boss, or they might be, you know, they might be a connection I need 5 years from now, you know? And so I think it's often easier than maybe younger people might think it is.
Yeah. It's always hard. I find for, you know, an 18-year-old to put themselves in that place. They just aren't, it's not usual for them. But, you know, like we're using, it's interesting. In one of my marketing classes, we're using a bot. It's called Rainmakers, and it's a mobile bot where you can, you learn how to sell or you learn how to do an elevator pitch. And, it's so funny because the part of the success that you would have with it is if you say a lot of thank you or excuse me and, you know, Mr. whatever. And, what is really, it taught me is that that's a completely different vernacular for an 18-year-old than it is for a 30 or 40-year-old, or 50 or 60-year-old. And it just tells me how different it is for them to have to learn how to do that.
Right.
So how we speak and how we address each other, as well as, you know, how comfortable we might feel reaching out to people that we don't know, might be second nature for all of us here, absolutely is not for somebody who's just stepping in.
Paige, I wonder if you have seen this. It's something, and you know, like with anything, a little bit of a generalization, but something I've noticed, just even if it's talking to younger cousins of mine or nephews or nieces or people we've had on staff, it seems like more than ever, a lot of students chase perfection more than maybe I've seen in the past. And really, to their own fault. And I don't know if that, I'm sure there's a lot of things that have led to that and the world changing, but it almost feels like they're really afraid to make mistakes. They're also really so fixated on doing things like kind of like, this is the way I have to do it. It's the way I've been taught, or maybe this is the way I've seen other people my age do it. So it is the right way, and maybe less willing to take those risks because it might lead to failure, or it might, you know, lead to something that's not, you know, outside the norm. Whereas I'm speaking for myself, and maybe I'm a little bit of an anomaly, but I'm someone that loves risks. I realize you're going to fail 10 times, but that 11th time is really going to like make a huge splash and going to make a lot of people notice. And also those 10 times, maybe you fail, but then you rework those 10 and you get another 7 out of those 10 that are also great, you know? And so it's kind of like you just have to keep shooting your shot and hopefully, you know, you're going to get something. But also it's like there's this joy in chasing something new and innovating. And sometimes I see that being a challenge for this younger generation where they're almost less inclined to innovate and more so holding themselves to this like standard that's really, I think, adds a lot of pressure to them. And, you know, it's tricky because, you know, you want to relieve that as, you know, someone that's supervising them. But, you know, it's they sort of hold themselves to this, you know, I don't know, mark that might not be possible.
Well, I think if we all were born in the 2000s, we probably feel the same because we have cameras following us around and public humiliation is unfortunately a super strong anti-risk momentum sure. thing. You know, I mean, I wonder how much, you know, as a somebody who I recognize that there are some really wonderful things about social media, and I spent a good amount of my career, you know, utilizing it to build businesses. But at this point, I can see a lot of damage that it's done in terms of people who don't want to take that shot because it could, you know, if they did a misstep, be everywhere. And I don't know. I don't know if I can say that we have fewer students looking to take that risk, because I know plenty of them that are, but I think it's probably more courageous of them now to be able to do that. Like I have a lot of students that are doing a lot of creator work, and I think, wow, this is amazing what they're doing.
You're really putting yourself out there for sure.
Yeah, they are. They are. Absolutely.
Hey, you know, you talk about, you know, the students and them putting themselves out there for those first steps, but you and I have something in common for our first steps. We both kind of started in this industry doing some small town radio. Talk to us about that first job for you.
Oh my gosh. That was amazing. I noticed that as well. You're in Columbus, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've had a couple of owners, like Claire Channel and so forth, that were very similar. But, you know, I started working at a very small radio station in Brunswick, Maryland, WTRI. And I started on a country format. I had no idea what country even was, but I was looking for a job and trying to work my way through my undergrad. And, you know, they gave it to me, and it was schooling for sure. It was really good schooling. And, you know, that was a time where we had the play it again lady. So literally, if she called, you had to pick up, yes, the stylist, and put it at the beginning of the song to play it again. And, you know, similar things like that. It was a very, when I say small market, it was very small market. But there's something really unique about those small market experiences and the kind of connection that they have to the community. So it was a helpful launch.
You know, it's you're so right, because it's what's missing from a lot of radio now is that local connection. When you are feel like you are friends with the air talent, because they saw you Friday night at your bowling league, and they had you in the, you know, again, I could go on for a while, but being in a small town radio, and you got your hands in all kinds of different piles, learning all kinds of different things, which eventually even, you know, led you into some radio ownership.
Yeah. You know, I eventually was working for a family in the Norfolk market, and they bought the station in Pittsburgh, which is originally how I got to Pittsburgh. But you know, at that time there was, the FCC was doing lotteries around frequencies. And so one of the gentlemen was very kind, and we worked together for a number of years. He was an engineer, and then his attorney and he and I worked on a variety of different licenses. I probably applied to almost a dozen here and there before I got the one in Maine, and build out the station up there in Maine, and ended up selling it. It came after a pretty not so cool economic time. So it wasn't my intention initially to just immediately sell it, but we ended up doing that. And so I oversaw the building of it and then turned it over to the new owner. But it was a great experience for me to kind of get my feet wet on operationally. What does it take to build a radio station? Yeah, that was something.
Yeah, I'm sure you learned a lot from that experience. And from there, you kind of got into, you know, the TV side of things, starting with cable.
Yeah. I stepped into the cable element in Pittsburgh as I was trying to earn my grad degree. From there, moved into internet. And, you know, from there, just did a variety of different things. My parents thought I couldn't keep a job. And I think it was just me. I get a little bored after a while, which is probably why teaching suits me at this point, because I'm continually changing things up and able to, you know, take on something new. So it's been a variety of different, but all mostly media related positions that I've had.
And you even did a consultant thing for a while. Talk to us about that.
I did. Moxie MMC was my consultancy, and I did a lot of work for Comcast here in this market. We have a local regional, I would say, sales management leadership in this market, running both Pittsburgh, or let's say Western Pennsylvania, as well as some of West Virginia and also Ohio. And so I worked for them off and on, about four different times in my career. And so I did a lot of training for them, a lot of sales training. Also did some work for KDKA at that time, CBS affiliate, TV affiliate here, and so forth. So a variety of different things under that hat.
That's got to be really valuable when, you know, with teaching, you know, being able to explain to students the importance of, you know, ad buying and stuff, and having all that experience yourself. You know, I think often professors, you know, maybe who are teaching in this industry, maybe have worked at a venue or something like that, but coming from that media side, I think is a very unique perspective for them.
It's helpful without a doubt, you know, and because everything's gotten more and more complicated, you know, like, you know, where we used to have just X number of impressions from a traditional slate of media, now becomes, you know, blow up time when you start working through all the socials and your own website, and, you know, add a layer of traditional on there, I think we have more event elements, you know, be it the large events at the large venues or smaller events that are meant to kick off, you know, various things. It's a lot, I think, for anybody in the business to wrap their heads around and try to get an understanding of exactly, you know, what kind of impact your dollar has.
So talk to us about making the decision to get into teaching, you know, because you've been in the media side of things for a while. You've done a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then so one time you think, could I do this? Or has this been something you've been thinking about for a while?
I don't think I was thinking about it in the main part of my career at all, honestly, because I was just so into media and enjoying that. And it was just when I took that adjunct position and all of a sudden I realized that teaching was a lot like training, and I'd done a lot of training in all of the different management roles that I had. And then I really got into teaching because I tell you what, it's just wonderful to have that kind of connection to an 18 to 21 year old and understand how vastly different the world looks through their eyes as you're trying to explain to them from a boomer perspective of, you know, of how this media world, you know, looked at then and now, and how they should take that moving forward in their career. It's such a gift, though, to be able to work with them and to help them and to see them succeed is amazing. And I just got hooked on it. And I like I said, I worked for most of my career. I had another full-time job while I was teaching. And when I morphed into just full-time teaching, it's a luxury because I get so much time to be able to, and I shouldn't say that. It's not like I have all the time in the world, believe me.
You guys still have to book your hours with her, you know, just, you know.
Yeah. at least I have an excuse to constantly go down like the AI realm or go down whatever it might be, you know, NIL influencer, you know, elements that I have time to wrap my head around. And then, you know, there's no better way of understanding something than to try to teach it. And so that it just definitely is an opportunity that I really cherish.
It sounds like you're just still exploring your own curiosity. You know, you mentioned that with students, but, you know, someone who self-admitted kind of bouncing positions because you became bored, you know, it's really seems like you've landed in a role that allows you to sort of continue to keep being curious and really forces you to keep being curious.
Yeah. It's a nice indulgence. Absolutely.
So we've heard a little bit about your career and, you know, what you're doing today and how you got there. But who are you away from work? Tell us a little bit about what you like to do when you're not on the job.
Well, let's see. I'm married to my wife of 13 years, live on the north side here in Pittsburgh with two small, ferocious dogs.
What kind of dogs do you have?
One's a little rat terrier and the other one's kind of a... you see, it's a combination Chihuahua and something else. And but they both have their own, mental health issues. And we work through them probably better than I have my own. And
as we all do.
Yeah. But I'm lucky because the north side where I live, and we have an old 1870s house that we rehabbed and then moved in about 10 years ago. It's really about a 30-minute walk into the city, and that walk takes me by right up the front door of PNC Park, and or if I take a different route, Acrisure Stadium, and over the river there, and right where the confluence of all the rivers, you know, the Ohio, the Monongahela, and the Allegheny, and it's such a gorgeous way to be able to come to work and then go home, and so it's really, best of all worlds because I can just walk into work and walk out and enjoy what's going on.
Very cool. How do you meet your wife?
Gosh, we had known each other over a number of years. And actually I thought at the time that we were not, when I would meet her, I'd be like, oh no, I wouldn't be interested in that. And then we actually sat down and started talking and it was like, oh my goodness, we are perfect for each other. And so, it was one of those serendipitous things.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I know you're busy and we don't want to take up too much of your time, but before we let you go, I want to hit you with our fast five. It's just five quick questions, just looking for your immediate response. First up, do you remember your very first concert?
I do. It was Grand Funk Railroad at the Boston Gardens. Yep. Oh, wow.
Very nice.
That's awesome.
I'm not sure why. I just remember it was that.
You know? At the old garden, too. I love that.
Yeah, wow, right? Yeah.
How about a favorite? Do you have an all-time favorite concert?
Don't know that I've been to so many of them that I'm afraid I'm a bit jaded, but the one that I most recently remember enjoying is at this really small venue here in Pittsburgh. It's the Manchester Craftsman Guild, which they specialize in jazz and they did a lot of jazz recordings back in the day. But Cassandra Wilson is a jazz artist.
Yeah.
She had a fabulous concert in a very, you know, intimate venue that has fabulous acoustics. That was great.
What was the last great book you read?
Oh my gosh, I read constantly fiction. I love science fiction. And I love Martha Wells and the Murderbot Diaries. So if you're not familiar with Martha Wells, I realize that sounds a little odd, but it's it's wonderful. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Pittsburgh food?
You know, Pittsburgh foods are not known for being healthy.
That's all right.
If you're familiar at all with the French fries on salads and so forth. So, but you know, have you heard of pierogies? Are you familiar?
Yes,
you all aren't
yeah.
that far away from here. So that's not, that's no biggie. So pierogies are some pretty good things. Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
Last question. There's a TV show that follows you around as you live your adventures. What's the theme song to the Paige Beale show, the song that plays over the opening credits to the song or the TV show that's all about you?
I don't know if there could be a theme song because I seem to, let me think. So it would probably be if Jason Mraz, Life is Wonderful, got married to Indigo Girls, Closer to Fine. How about that?
One could be the intro, one could be the
outro. I don't know
how
that would happen. Yeah.
It's got one for the credits. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed getting to chat with you. Before we wrap up here, give any plugs. Where can people find you if they want to connect?
Yeah, sure. LinkedIn is really my mainstay these days, although I lurk on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and Thread. Literally, I lurk anymore there. But LinkedIn is probably the best way. And my handle there is just simply Paige Beal.
Just that easy. Hey, thank you again for the time today. And best of luck with everything in your world.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure, believe me, has been all mine. Really enjoyable.
And a big thanks to everybody who took the time to listen to this episode of Adventures in Venueland. Remember, you can subscribe and find more episodes wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We do love your 5-star reviews. It helps others find us. Until the next adventure, I'm Dave Rettelberger.
And I'm Paul Hooper. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Adventures in Venueland is a side project of the Event and Venue Marketing Conference, a marketing conference that brings together diversified event and venue professionals to cultivate education, collaboration, and innovation for the growing sports and live entertainment industry. Find out more at eventvenuemarketing.com.
Audio editing and mixing by Camille Faulkner.
Design and digital advertising by Megan Ebeck.
Copywriting and publicity by Samantha Marker.
Guest booking and brand strategies by Paul Hooper.
Guest research by Dave Rettelberger.
Marketing strategies by Paul Hooper, Megan Ebeck, and Samantha Marker. Thanks for joining us. Until the next adventure.